Welcome to G.I. Joe Chronicles, Outpost Edition.
I trust your mission was equally well executed.
I want a stone cold righteous attention.
Militarily speaking, it's only fair to say that Cobra Commander is a world-class buffoon.
Jim the Joe Junkie breaking in before we get started. It seems that some Televipers and Technovipers disrupted our computer system here at the Outpost, so there were some technical difficulties with this episode, and there may be some points in the show where the audio gets a little unsteady, but Breaker and Dial Tone were able to save enough of the audio to get the show completed. And Mainframe upgraded the Outpost network so that Cobra couldn't disrupt the show any further. Please join Jared and myself as we discuss the toys of 1983.
Now, back to G.I. Joe.
Welcome to G.I. Joe Chronicles, Outpost, Episode 4. I am Jim Meal, also known as Jim the Joe Junkie. Over the course of this podcast, we intend to chronologically discuss the toys, comics, cartoons, and many other aspects of G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, which is my favorite pop culture subject. Without getting too bogged down in the details, just my co-hosts and I having a conversation and reminiscing. We've discussed the toys and comics from 1982, as well as the first three miniseries of the Sunbow cartoons. This episode, we will be discussing the figures and vehicles from 1983. And of course, I'm not alone. Joining me today is a returning co-host, Jared Albrecht, the yard sale artist, also known as Death Probe. Thanks for coming back to the Outpost, Jared, so that we can discuss another year of great action figures and vehicles. Since the last time we met, what's a secret mission you've been on?
Well, to keep it G.I. Joe related, I would say a little fire and ice. That is a reference to G.I. Joe characters that I've drawn in my book page sketches, of which you have one. I'm pretty sure you have Falcon. I've drawn two more, and I call it fire and ice because I drew Snowjob on the page from the Army Manual while I was on Aaron Moss's G.I. Joe podcast recently. I did that on the live stream. And then after that, a guy contacted me and said, hey, would you do me a barbecue? And I said, yeah. I said, I'll do barbecue. So I did barbecue, and I was like, hey, you know, the usual price, like $30 for his barbecue with shipping and everything. And I was like, hey, if you want Snow Job, because I just drew it on the show, and it's no one actually requested it. I said, I'll throw him in for like an extra $20, give you a good deal. And he was like, no, thanks. And that made me sad. Sad. I mean, not as an artist, like, dude just doesn't like Snow Job, right? That's how I'm going to take it to protect my own feelings. But man, why you got to do Snow Job like that?
My secret mission, I have been upgrading my USS flag. I added a second or lower deck to where I can fit other vehicles in. When this episode comes out, I'll put it on my Facebook, my Instagram page, so everybody can see that. It's something I've been wanting to do since I got my flag about 9 months ago.
Yeah, we're all really happy for you, Jim. It's great.
Not trying to brag. I'm just saying that's something
I know how other people feel when I show off my hardbound comic book collections. You know, now I know. I know the receiving end is like, and I don't like it, but I'm glad for you. Really, I am.
All right. With our introduction out of the way, let's roll right into our first segment that we call That Figures.
Go get the new members of the G.I. Joe team. Here's Torpedo and Tripwire.
1983 was the second year of the Real American Hero line. In episode one of this podcast, we discussed how there was a common color scheme, which was what, Jared?
Let me think. What was it? Oh, I remember. It was olive drab, a.k.a. O.D. green.
That is correct. This year, we had a little more variety. We had some grays, some whites. Torpedo was the gray and the black. And with you being an artist, what color is Gung-Ho? Because I have no idea.
You know, off the top of my head, not looking at him, I've always considered him to be like teal. I'm going with teal.
That's what I've heard from others before. So let's go with teal.
All right, teal it is.
And I think Airborne had a little bit of different coloring too. Kind of similar, a little like lighter blue. Snowjob we just talked about, it was white. Something we didn't discuss on the 1982 toy episode was that all of the characters were based on specialties from the Army. Well, in 83, the Joes added to their ranks by recruiting from other branches of the armed services. from the Navy, the Marines, and Air Force. The Joes also began to include environmental specialists to their ranks. Not only did the Joes get an increase in their ranks and specialties, the Cobras did as well. A couple of new troopers, as well as two new independent operators. There were a few changes to the construction of the figures in 1983. Some softer plastic to reduce thumb breakage, smaller waist pieces for improved mobility, and different size screw holes. The 1982 backpacks are loose in the 83 figures, which I didn't know until I was reading up on some of this. I didn't realize that. Not really being able to afford any 82 figures. But the biggest change came to the already impressive articulation by giving the figures the swivel arm articulation. So when I was a kid, I had no idea that there was a difference between the 82 figures and the 83 figures. It wasn't until many years later, not until I began collecting again in 2010 or so, that I realized that. Jared, as a kid, did you recognize that at all? Did you realize that there was some different articulation?
Before I answer that, I want some kind of a prize for not giggling during different size screw holes. Okay. First of all, that's, I want a prize. With that out of the way,
I'll give you a no prize.
With that out of the way, you know, nothing beyond the obvious, really, Jim. Like, swivel arm and battle grip changed everything. We know that. So that clearly was the difference. I think, you know, there was some kind of just a general feel that there was just a slightly different construction, but not enough to, no pun intended, put my finger on it, you know, with the broken thumbs and all that stuff. I don't think I knew. I didn't know it to this level of detail until you mentioned it right now on the show. There was just a vibe that said that those first round figures were just some slightly different. You know, now that I know some of the details, thanks to what you just told us on the show, that makes total sense. But yeah, really the only one that as a kid, I would have said, oh, I mean, clearly swivel arm and battle grip changed everything.
Yeah, I didn't even realize there were straight arms until later after I was collecting, because I didn't really start collecting until 83, 84.
We had straight arm and we enjoyed the upgrade. And in fact, and I'm certain we'll probably cover this later or whatever, but you know, they refer to a lot, like, you know, they redid those the first run with it, and they're kind of referred to, I think, as 1.5s. Is that how you know them? The 1.5 version, is that right?
That's what they consider them, is the 1.5s. So they're not really, they're not new figures, but they're not old. So yeah, the 1.5s. So not only did the Joes recruit personnel from the other branches of the armed forces, they added vehicles for the air and the snow. And the Joes get a place to call home when not fighting Cobra. In 1982, Cobra vehicles were noticeably absent. In 83, they got some upgrades in the form of some very iconic vehicles. It is now time to discuss each of the new figures that were released in the year that we are covering. To complete this, we will be using a combination of 3djoes.com, yojo.com, and the book The Ultimate Guide to G.I. Joe. We will be discussing the information that can be found on the character's file card, such as the code name and specialty, the file name, a statement from their file card, and a brief description of the character. Jared, I'll let you get started with the Joe figures first.
All right. I believe I will start it with Ace, who is a fighter pilot. His file name is Armbruster. It's fun to say. Brad J. Armbruster. I served an entire career in the military. Never met a dude named Armbruster. And I was in the Air Force. Anyways, we all know he came with the Sky Striker. Off of his file card, it does say Ace has one major character flaw, cutthroat poker. A predilection for gambling would ordinarily disqualify an applicant for the G.I. Joe team. But in Armbruster's case, you can hardly call it gambling since he never loses. And that's why they call him Ace. So that's a fun one. Good old Ace. And a brief description of the figure. Ace is basically in a more space-age flight suit. Not the standard flight suit that you'd see in like Top Gun or something like that, but it's sort of like white with black and red trim. It's got the bigger, bulkier helmet. It's more of the, you know, the flight suit you'd see on a guy who was flying like an SR-71 as opposed to an F-14. It's more of that high altitude kind of look, although it's pretty unique. I've never seen a flight suit like this one in the military, but it's a fun design. And man, you are going to lose that helmet, because Lord knows I did. And I never found that thing again.
Yeah, I've gotten a couple Ace figures over the years. I still yet to have a helmet.
My brother and I will still tell the tale of when we were out back of our house when we lived in Michigan and we were playing with Ace. You know, he had a little parachute and you throw him up in the air and come down the parachute. And he came down one time with no helmet. We're like, oh, crap, his helmet fell off. So we did like that hard target, inch by inch search of the backyard through the grass looking for that thing. We never found it. We were out there for hours looking for that helmet, and we never found it.
Next up is Airborne. His file name is Talltree Franklin E. His specialty is airborne infantrymen. Airborne jokes around and gets loose, but he's serious also. Dead serious. You look at him, and sometimes he's looking right through you. Must be the Indian in him. Navajos call it the far-seeing look. Spooky. And he has somewhat unique colors. He's got khaki pants, khaki undershirt. Is that that teal again? Blue, light blue overshirt.
Let's call it seafoam green.
There we go, seafoam green. And it looks like he's got a, I didn't notice this before, it looks like he's got a harness around his waist there. Well, he's a helicopter assault trooper, so he's got the harness and drop out of the helicopter. Comes with a backpack, a helmet, and a, looks like a M16. That's Airborne.
Yeah, Airborne's a cool figure. I don't think I realized until very recently that he was Native American. But that's cool. I thought Spirit was the Native American on the team. I guess I didn't realize it. I think I didn't realize it because I don't think I had him. He's one of the few from this era that I didn't actually have. So, you know, back in the day, you spend a lot of time reading your file card over and over again and getting to know the guy. I think this is one that got by me. I think, but he's cool. You know, I like him. I dig him. And I do like how you pointed out the harness, because I've also been to air assault school to jump out of rappel out of helicopters, and I am familiar with said harness, so that's a neat detail. All right, next up is CoverGirl, and her real name is Courtney A. Krieger. She is the Wolverine driver. That's what she does. She drives the Wolverine, the big tank with the missile racks on it. CoverGirl finds that she must work against her beauty to prove herself. She's compelled to learn and master decidedly unfeminine disciplines. Her self-assurance and stunning good looks reduce most men to stuttering fools. And I've got a special place in my heart for CoverGirl because I believe I got her in a mail away. Anyway, her figure description is basically she wears a tan outfit with a dark brown jacket and some dark brown boots. And she's got sort of a short crop red haircut. And that's about it. I don't believe she came with any weapons when she came with the Wolverine. And yeah, she's a fairly simple figure, but I always liked her because it was a special to me because it came in the mail.
If you notice what Hasbro did throughout the years, they always had a female figure in the toy line from 1982 all the way to 1987. CoverGirl was the second one. In 84 was the Baroness, 85 Lady J, 86 Zarana, and 87 was Jinx. And after that, there was only one other female figure, and it was the Ninja Force Scarlet. Next up is Doc. File name, Greer Carl W. Primary specialty is medical doctor, secondary, chaplain's assistant. An avowed pacifist, Doc believes that the G.I. Joe team is the best we have. We send them into the worst situations imaginable because that's where we need them most. When the going gets tough, they need something more than a roller. I'm their main man. And his uniform is a tan jumpsuit, looks like. It might be pants, but tan with some sunglasses. He came with a stretcher, which we'll discuss now and possibly later. The stretcher would fit on the skids of the Dragonfly and not slide off. Forward thinking for Hasbro. Similar to Stalker, he's African-American. So they continued that diversity in the toy line. It was the whole toy line. It wasn't just the beginning. They continued all the way through.
A military toy line that reflects the makeup of the military. What a valuable concept.
And that's part of what kept it so relatable to the kids.
Well, speaking of not diverse, I guess it's time to go into our next one. The next character is the guy. You either love him or you think he's just as vanilla gets. I was a vanilla guy for a long time on him until the Devil's Due made him interesting. But we're going to talk about Duke. You know what? I don't even have his file card pulled up on my computer right now. And I can tell you right now, his name's Conrad Hauser. I don't have to look. I'm going to look anyway. Let's make this fun. Oh, look, his name is Conrad Hauser. He's a first sergeant. They brought him in as sort of the field team leader, which I didn't like. That's why I don't like Duke, because I was always a Stalker guy, and he basically took Stalker's job, and I don't like that. Anyway, let me get to the file card. He made a statement after declining a commission. They tell me that an officer's job is to impel others to take the risks so that the officer survives to take the blame in the event of a total catastrophe. With all due respect, sir, if that's what an officer does, I don't want any part of it. Now, we all know what he looked like, but, you know, in case you tune into this G.I. Joe podcast about G.I. Joe figures and you don't know what he looks like, I just want to welcome you to the show. But, yeah, Duke wore the tan shirt with the OD green pants. He had the green bandolier. He had the brown boots. He had the blonde haircut. You know, he's just the all-American guy. And he came with a green helmet, a green submachine gun, black binoculars. I always liked his backpack. Tan backpack with the shovel in it, like very tactical looking backpack. And some of them even came with a little flag decal that you could put on Duke's shirt. And I think he started as a mail away in 83 and then became carded in the following year. But that is Duke, just one of the, you know, tent pole characters, really got a lot of love in the cartoon. I don't know a lot about the cartoon, as I've proven time and time again on the show, because I was in Germany when it was at its most popular. And we didn't get it there. But I do know that Duke gets a lot of love in the cartoon when he's not captured. Back to you, Jim.
We had a discussion, I guess prematurely, because we talked about this 1982 episode that, similar to you, I'm not a Duke fan. I prefer Stalker or Flint. But I can see where people would be attracted to him based on how much they used him in the cartoons. And if that's how you consume G.I. Joe, I can see why you'd really like him. Grand Slam is the one we're going to discuss right now. File name was Barney James. Primary specialty is artillery. Secondary was electronics engineer. He's soft-spoken and calm, just a bit shy, intelligent, loves to read escapist fantasy, science fiction, and comic books. Now, he, in 1983, was packaged with the jump jetpack, that landing pad with the jetpack. And instead of the red pads, he got the silver pads. Other than that, his figure was the same.
Grand Slam with the jump jetpack is another one of the figures that I did not have as a kid. I always thought it was kind of cool. I think I have a silver one in my collection now that found out and about. But yeah, it was always kind of cool to see the silver pads, I guess. Just kind of a reminder of a figure from the previous year with a new look. And speaking of that, I'm going to roll into Grunt version 2. Grunt version 2, his name is Robert W. Graves, and on his file card this time, he's still primary specialty is infantry, but it says Falcon Pilot, which, if I remember correctly, is that the glider?
Yes, it was the glider that fell apart pretty quickly.
So this is the version that comes with that. It's all coming back to me now. His file card says, Grunt is a highly motivated, systemic individual. He's a stand-up guy who doesn't blow his cool in a firefight. That's a good soldier right there. This time around, he looks pretty similar as to last time. Still got a receding hairline, but he is no longer OD green. He is now head-to-toe in tan.
You gotta keep bringing that up, don't you?
But otherwise, he looks pretty much the same. It's pretty much tan replaces OD green. He came with just the helmet this time because he was just featured with the Falcon glider. Now, this is a cool version of the character, and I think I have him now. I didn't have him in the past. I know this because I was always jealous and never did get my hands on the glider. But I did get my hands on a G.I. Joe kite that is of the same shape, triangular. You know, it said G.I. Joe on it. It was camo and all that. So I used that as my glider. I would actually attach my figures to that kite and then toss them and let them fly on that. And that was my replacement for the official glider that I never owned. So everybody feels sad for me. Back to you, Jim.
I'm sure you're not the only kid that taped their figures to the kites and made them fly. All right. So next up is Gung Ho, file name Lafitte Etienne R. And I know I butchered that. So anybody from Louisiana, please forgive me. His primary military specialty is Recondo. Zap says, all Marines are crazy, but Gung Ho is the hairiest, scariest, craziest jarhead that ever scratched, kicked, and bit his way out of that hole in the swamp they call Paris Island. And he is that teal color we were talking about earlier. He's wearing a cover with some camouflage pants. It looked like green with a teal. And he's got a very open chest vest with the Marine bird and ball tattoo on his chest. I think it was issue 10. No, I'm sorry, 11, where he was introduced in the comics. It was the pipeline ploy. All he had on was what you see there. Reg didn't have a winter jacket on or nothing. I'm thinking, that guy's crazy. He was used in the cartoon quite a bit, too. He's one that people really remember, mostly because he's got a good personality in both the comics and the cartoon.
And a very memorable figure design. I mean, you said that weird color green is always just kind of stand out. That tattoo on the chest, you know, it's just a memorable design. He's definitely the most, what's the name of the band that sang YMCA?
Village People?
Yeah, he's definitely the most Village People.
I'm sure that you've seen the pictures and stuff of people that have done the Village People band using G.I. Joe figures.
Oh, I might have missed this. I think this is something I need in my life.
This has been a while, but you got Gung Ho, and then you've got Spirit, and got Toll Booth. Who am I missing? Wild Bill.
Yeah, it's the cowboy. Hey, okay. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
All right. Well, a guy who's not going to make it into the lineup is going to be our next guy, and it's going to be Snow Job. Snow Job's name is Harlan W. Moore. He is an Arctic trooper. That is what he is designed for. Submitted by Rock and Roll. You think we call him Snow Job because he does his job on skis? Negative. He's a con artist, pure and simple, except when he picks up his rifle, sure as heck, something's going to fall down. Again, if you're listening to this show and you don't know what he looks like, welcome to G.I. Joe in general. Everybody knows what Snow Job looks like. He wears an all-white parka outfit. Think Roger Moore at the beginning of A View to a Kill. That's what he looks like, except he's got a red beard. He's even got the big black sunglasses to help with the snow blindness. Man, he came with some cool stuff. He came with the skis that you could like attach to his back. He came with the ski poles that could attach to it. And the laser rifle. Man, they put a lot of thought into this one, and he's pretty cool. I mean, the only downside is he's very specific, Joe. You got to be going to the Arctic to use him. But that is Snow Job, and I had him, and I still enjoy him. What about you, man? What you got on Snow Job?
He's one of my top 20 Joes. As you mentioned, you could put everything he had on his backpack, his skis, his poles. He could hold his gun. Everything went right there, which not every figure could do going forward. All right, next up is another environmental specialist, Torpedo. His file name is Leialoa Edward W. His primary military specialty is Navy SEAL. Spends off-duty hours perfecting his fighting skills and marksmanship. Strict vegetarian, regarded by his teammates as a highly competent professional, but has the personality of a cold fish. His figure was, he was in a wetsuit, I would assume, gray in the middle and black with his face covered. Came with a nice backpack and flippers and a harpoon gun. But as a figure, he is a great figure. What do you think of him?
Oh, he's pretty cool. I've often assumed, and I think I've heard the rumor, that he was actually named after the Marvel Comics inker Steve Leialoha, which I always thought that was neat. I don't have any paperwork to back that up, but I thought that was neat.
That's correct.
Okay. And I always thought that Flint was G.I. Joe's very first warrant officer. I forgot that this guy was a CW4. This is our first warrant officer in G.I. Joe. And I think that's cool because my dad was a warrant officer. So, yeah, just a neat figure. Very environmental. You know, this is when you take to the bathtub, man. This is a bathtub toy. And I love it.
You do the buy and sell trade and stuff like I do. And every Torpedo I've ever gotten has had rusty screws on the figure. Very difficult if you have to change the O-ring.
And let's see, I believe next up is a new addition to the squad. It is Tripwire. Tripwire's name is Tormod S. Skoog. It's got to be an anagram for something. I don't know if it is or not, but Tormod S. Skoog. That's Tripwire's name. He's a minesweeper. That's what he does. Explosive ordnance disposal, demolitions, that type of thing. Tripwire freaks people out. He's always clumsy, jittery, dropping things, except when he's working with his high explosives. This was something that they, I believe, mentioned in the comics and the cartoon both. I'll wait for Jim to correct me on that. But I just remember him, clumsiness is his thing.
Yes, in the cartoon and the comic, I remember multiple scenes in the comics where he was tripping over everything. At the same time, he was good at what he did, and that was portrayed as well. So,
Yes, and his figure description is he kind of fell back a little bit into the OD Green thing, but they spruced it up by giving him the protective vest, which was like a dark gray. He had light gray boots and gloves. He had the protective helmet with the black goggles built on. He came with the minesweeper and three mines that could fit into the backpack. And that is Tripwire.
And the next one, the last G.I. Joe on the list, is Wild Bill. His file name is Hardy William S. His primary military specialty is helicopter pilot. And his secondary military specialty is fixed wing pilot. A reason I bring that up, I'll explain a little bit. He's amiable and slow talking, fancies himself a country western singer, totally honest in personal dealings, but not beyond spinning a tall tale for the amusement of comrades. His figure, with the name Wild Bill, you'd expect he is Texan. He has a cowboy hat, green pants and shirt, and his cowboy hat's blue, and he's got a brown vest with two revolvers on one on each side of his leg. He kind of reminds me of the Air Cavalry from the 60s and 70s, or am I not thinking correct?
You are thinking pretty darn correct. Again, my father was a warrant officer helicopter pilot who also flew fixed wing, and there's a lot of correct going on here. Every Army helicopter pilot I've ever met has been like him, like Wild Bill, just kind of laid back and funny and enjoys to tell a story. But my dad flew for the Air Cav. Well, we lived in Texas, and each member of the Air Cav is assigned a set of spurs and a hat like this. And so this is all very, very factual, sir.
All right. So some of those movies I watched were accurate then.
Yes.
Now, earlier I mentioned his secondary military specialty because in the comic book, Larry Hama really leaned on that. He had Wild Bill flying the transport planes all the time, C-5As.
Yeah, galaxies. He might have done some C-130s. I can't remember. But yeah, he flew the big stuff, the heavies.
And in the comics and the cartoons, his personality, how they used him really stuck out. He's one of everybody's favorites. So
yeah, just an absolute kind of heartbreaker for me, and we'll have double doses of heartbreak on this episode because he came with the Dragonfly, which is modeled after the H-1 Cobra, which is what my dad flew, and this is one of the Joes I never had. So I always wanted this one because this is one my dad flew, and I never had it, but you know, thanks to Classified and a few $100, I've got one coming up in my future.
Now, do you have, like, are you going to add an extra addition to your house for the size of that Dragonfly?
I don't know. Or? I don't know how I'm going to make this happen. But I ordered it. I was like, dang it. This is the one I missed out on as a kid. I mean, shoot, Dragonfly even got, if I'm not mistaken, got re-released with like a tan paint job. You'd know better than me. You're much better at this than I am. And I never got any of them. I think the Locust is what it was.
Sounds familiar. Yes. All right. Next up, we've got, as I mentioned before, all the Cobra figures got re-released from 82, re-released as the swivel arm. So you got your Cobra Commander, your Cobra Officer, all those figures, which were only three of them. So, but they did add a few for this year. The first one was Destro. He is the enemy's weapon supplier. His file name is unknown. His primary military specialty is weapons manufacturer. Destro respects the G.I. Joe team for their combat skills and expertise, but harbors them for wasting such skills to maintain peace. He's totally dedicated to seeing them undermined, subverted, or destroyed. As Jared said, if this is your first time, welcome to G.I. Joe Podcast. Destro is a very known, even people that don't collect G.I. Joe know who Destro is, but he has a silver mask, a black bodysuit or black clothes, very wide open chest collar, reminiscent of the disco era, and a very large red medallion. One of the favorites. Everybody loves Destro. They utilize them very well in the comics and the cartoons. What do you think of Destro?
Oh, definitely one of the biggest add-ons in G.I. Joe history. really took Cobra from that sort of one note, we don't know what to do with them first wave, to something like, what's with the silver mask and these wrist, you know, rockets on his wrist. And he just continues to grow like culturally. I was watching something the other day where a guy was talking about when he was a kid, he was a black guy, and he was talking about how you associate with Destro. He felt like Destro was a black character. And I think it's because he was voiced by a black guy in the cartoon. And what a voice, like what a defining voice. Like you hear that voice in your head when you read the comics. And it's weird because like he's clearly got Caucasian skin. He's clearly from Scotland. But that voice, I think the voice and the character design just made him totally attractive to whatever race, whatever. We all love Destro. Like he was just so mysterious and cool. Kind of like Snake Eyes and Cobra Commander. This is another one of those guys with a mask that automatically makes him more mysterious.
I'm glad you mentioned the wrist rockets, because that's one thing I forgot to mention. He made the weapons for Cobra, which we'll be discussing some of them in the motor pool section. But later on, they even changed it to where he was leader of the Iron Grenadiers, and he went off by himself. And just the consternation, the infighting in between Destro, Firefly, Major Blood, all those, it all started with these two, the Destro and the next one we're going to talk about, and the storylines and stuff, the history, like you said. Again, with Larry Hammer writing the file cards, he set that footprint for so much in the toy line and the comics without even probably realizing it.
Yeah, dude, just perfect storm of good character design, good character design from Larry's writing, and then you get that voice, and it's just this trifecta of an unforgettable character that's appealing to everybody.
Arthur Burkhart was the voice actor, and he was black. You guys covered Devil's Due on G.I. Joe Chronicles. If you remember, his son was part black.
Yes.
I don't know if they were trying to correct that or turn that.
They were leaning into like, I think.
Oh, they were leaning. Kind of assumed. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Which is always interesting because, you know, you got to wonder. It's not the Baroness' kid.
No, they. I don't know if they do. They ever say?
I don't know. I'll have to get back to you as we continue reading through that.
I don't think they do.
Well, not as popular. Still with some influence. Next up is the second of the old three. Is Major Blood, everyone's favorite Australian mercenary. And that's what his specialty is, just mercenary and terrorist and weapons and tactics. And his name is Sebastian Blood, so he's one of the few that has, like, his real name out there as like, he is Major Blood. Major Blood writes, I can't read it without laughing. Major Blood writes poetry badly. When you're feeling low and woozy, slap a fresh clip in your Uzi. Assume the proper firing stance and make sure the suckers jump and dance from the Attica Gazette. And that is like the funny defining characteristic of Major Blood would be his bad poetry. And they do a pretty good job of that, especially in the comics. His figure description is as follows. He had kind of a neat design. He had the whole eye patch thing going on. He had a dark brown outfit with black trim, like boots and gloves and, you know, places for knives and whatnot. Just very decked out mercenary with a black helmet. His accessories, it was a missile backpack, like you could see the missiles on it, and a rocket launcher pistol. So he had a really good design as well, but I just think he got overshadowed by Destro's perfect design, but still memorable and cool looking. We got to give it up for Major Blood. Who, when I was in the military, we sometimes would joke about Major Blood. We talk about, like, he's the guy that you don't want to get assigned to, because if memory serves, his units that he's commanded have never been successful at anything they've ever tried to do. So it's like Major Blood feels like he's cursed if you get assigned to him as your leader. So that's Major Blood. Bad poetry. Doesn't seem to win a lot tactically, but over to you, Jim.
Got a couple things for you. First one, it surprises me that his name's out there. And not unknown, because first of all, he's a mercenary. And second of all, I wouldn't want people to know that I wrote that poetry. The other thing is his arm, the one arm. What are your thoughts? Do you think that's a metal robotic arm or just a guard for the rocket pistol?
Okay. That's, you bring up an interesting thing because I didn't have Major Blood as a kid. I think I acquired him within the last couple of years. And that was my first realization that he had an odd arm. I want to say that he has one swivel arm battle grip. The other one's like very solid or something like that. And that was a surprise to me. It's something I didn't know that everybody else in the 80s who had him probably knew that, obviously. But I didn't know that. So that was a surprise to me. I have never formulated a theory on the arm. But I imagine, if I'm honest with myself, and I go back to child Jared, get you know, if I did have this or play with it, I would have probably assumed Cyborg.
That's what I always thought it was. It was a metal or cyborg arm. And it had something to do with losing his arm and his eye in an accident.
Makes sense.
All right. Next one is the Cobra Hiss Tank Driver. Again, this is a troop builder. Came with the Hiss Tank. His file gnome was unknown because there were many of them. Cobra Hiss Drivers are committed to the destruction of G.I. Joe. This newly developed battle vehicle is a real match for the G.I. Joe team. Beware. In his uniform, the bright red jumpsuit, I would say, with long black mid-thigh boots, which makes sense for what he does with a tank. And his helmet was red with a black mask covering like from the nose down with a silver visor and a bright blue chest with a silver Cobra logo. Very eye-catching, very iconic, I guess is the look for it. You're going through a bin of stuff. You see that, you know that's a Hiss Driver. The most difficult part is finding a figure with the logo still on it. Did you have a Hiss Tank when you were younger?
You know, I did not. I did not have a Hiss Tank. I always was sort of envious of my friends that did. I always thought the driver looked particularly cool. He's a good design and another memorable one. 83 is really strong in that regard. So, yeah, but I didn't have him, my friend. And I kind of lied to everybody earlier when I said there was three new Cobras. Technically, there's four. This fourth one that I'm going to go into now is the Viper Pilot. He's much like Grunt version 2, who came with a hang glider. This is the Viper Pilot that came with their version of the hang glider, the Cobra Viper Attack Glider, I think is what it was specifically called. And he's just like the regular Cobra Trooper, except instead of a red snake on his chest, he has a silver one. And it's kind of funny because I didn't put that puzzle together for a long time. Like I'd found a silver one out in the wild and it was in my collection. I was always thought, well, what, I wonder if this is just like a variant or whatever. And it took me a while before I realized that it is essentially a variant, but he kind of got his own identity as Viper Pilot. It is not terribly exciting. Like even on his file card, that little thing at the bottom says Cobras swear absolute loyalty to their fanatical leader, Cobra Commander, their goal to conquer the world for their own evil purposes. There's nothing special about him as a Viper Pilot. I do like the silver chest emblem. I think it's a neat variation. Aside from that, he's not terribly interesting. He didn't come with any weapons or anything like that. He just came with a hang glider. Back to you, Jim.
That was an easy repaint for them to do, and similar to the Hiss Tank Driver. If you got find one of those with a silver logo still intact, hold on to it. It's worth some good money. All right, so now that we've reviewed and reacquainted ourselves with the figures from 83, it's time to choose our personal top three Joes or Cobras from this year. Jared, I'm going to let you go first.
This is the tough one, man. There's a lot here. All right. My personal top three from 1983's additional figures, in no particular order. Destro. We went on and on about how important he is to canon. Destro definitely gets a slot. I will say, this is tough. I will say Wild Bill because of my personal family connection with my dad being a pilot, army pilot, much like Wild Bill and every other army pilot I ever met. And three, I will say, let's go with Snow Job. I'm going to give him props for a unique design. And like we talked about, it's so cool that everything fits in his backpack. So those are three I'm going with. You probably could have rolled the dice and picked another random three, and I'd be totally okay with it because this is a very strong, strong lineup. I'm interested to see what you've got, my friend.
My top three, again, in no particular order because that would be difficult. Destro, because he's unique, brought so much to the table when he was introduced. Snowjob and Torpedo. I like the environmental specialist of this year. All right, anything else on the characters before we move forward?
No, man, let's talk about some vehicles.
All right, now we're going to move on to the motor pool segment.
Cobra Invasion! Get the G.I. Joe Sky Striker! Ace the Airborne!
on, let's get those turkeys. We're going to get Cobra this time.
And what is an army without their means of deployment? G.I. Joe and Cobra had some of the best vehicles and playsets of any toy line. The Joe vehicles for 1983 still had a grounded military feel. And as I mentioned previously, the Joes added a couple of aircraft and their first environmental specialty vehicle. Cobras got a major upgrade in their armament, aircraft, and support. And what would be the theme and standard of Cobra, their vehicles were usually a little crazier or sci-fi, which in my opinion is the way that it should be. The villains should be just a little bit out there. All right, so now let's break down each of the G.I. Joe vehicles. I'll go first with the APC. APC is the Amphibious Personnel Carrier, and it was what you expect a personnel carrier to be. It's a six-wheeled vehicle with a tapered or wedged front and what is a mock tarp on the back. You could hold, what were they advertising? You could hold 28 G.I. Joe soldiers in that thing with all the pegs and the seats. So that was more figures than what were out at that time. So they were really looking at it, looking in the future. But it had a big gun on the top, and it was one of my and my brother's first vehicles. What'd you think of this, Jared?
It's definitely got an iconic feel. I remember it popping up in the comics. Again, I'm more of a comic guy, but I'm pretty sure it popped up in cartoons as well. It's just kind of that stalwart Joe vehicle, very based on a real armored personnel carrier. Yeah, I mean, it goes nicely with your vamp. I don't think I had an APC, not originally. I think I might have scored one at a yard sale later in life. As you know, I don't really collect vehicles because I don't have space for that. So I'm sure I sold it off and used those profits to buy more figures. And now let's take a painful, painful trip down memory lane again for Jared, because I believe next up in our vehicles is the Dragonfly, or they call it the XH-1. It is based off of the AH-1 Cobra helicopter. Again, as Jim said, these are very grounded in military. It's very similar to what my dad flew, and I did not own one. But yeah, it's a very cool attack helicopter. Oh my God. I scrolled too low and I saw the original retail price of it was $8.99. I'm going to throw up. All right.
That is dangerous. The cartoon episode that my brother and I went through the Sears wish book from, you know, the years that 3djoes.com had on there. And yeah, we saw some of the prices and we were just like, it made us sick. It was,
I would pay those prices so fast right now. Like,
yeah. There was a couple times where he said, we'll take three of those, please.
Oh, absolutely. But yeah, this is your standard military aircraft AH-1 Cobra. It's got a ball turret in the front. It's got some rocket and missile pods on the left and right. Many wings there. It seats two, one fore, one aft. And it came with Wild Bill. And I love it.
Again, a very iconic aircraft. You'd be hard to find a comic book or a cartoon without it in it. Next up is the Falcon Glider. It was what you expect a glider to be, almost a triangle wing. It had a little clip that you would put your figure on, which came with, as we mentioned before, came with a grunt. It was camouflage with the G.I. Joe logo across the back of it. I never had one of these, but from what I understand, once you flew it a couple times, that was about it.
Yeah, there's probably a reason that we don't find the Falcon Glider at yard sales or anything. Like, I've never seen one. Like, I vaguely knew they existed because I think I saw them in the little mini catalog or the Sears catalog or something. But, like, I've never seen one in real life because I think they fall apart after three flights.
I haven't seen one either. It's similar to the Cobra Missile Command Center we talked about last episode.
The cardboard.
The cardboard, yeah. There's a reason why you don't find them, because they just didn't hold up.
Well, speaking of command centers, that brings up my next one is the Headquarters Command Center for the Joes. And I think anybody who ever actually had this, I think we all just called it the pit. Let's be honest. We called it the pit. They can put Headquarters Command Center all they want, but we call it the pit. And, you know, it's just basically a little facade. It's kind of cool. It's a little playset facade of a base that you can defend. It has a big gun in the middle, has an American flag, has some smaller guns and some spotlights. Just a neat little playset. And I'm going to do the thing I shouldn't do. Ooh, original retail, man. It was fancy. $24.99. Man, that was for the rich kids. That would explain why I didn't have one. But that is the Headquarters Command Center, but everybody called it the pit.
I didn't get one until about 3 years ago. I do like how in the cartoon they kind of tried to emulate the front of it with a big gun and the right. Angled front. And I like how Larry Hama used it in the comics. He actually called it the It was using it as a base that you could set up quickly in a remote area.
And yeah, didn't they like four commander to help him build it too?
Yes. That was up in the Alps.
In the Alps, I remember now. Yeah. Yep.
And then they used it one time actually in the pit. They assembled it in the pit and then raised it up on the hydraulic lift. But yes, the two times they used it, I liked how he used it. He didn't ignore it. But no, this was one, as you said, the fancy kids, the kids that had some a little bit more money had this back in the day. And really, it was pretty decent size. I've got one on my shelf, and it takes up quite a bit of space if you include the helicopter pad that came along with it. All right, next up, this was a small play set that they had, was the JUMP, which is a Jet Mobile Propulsion Unit. It was simply a launch pad that came with the Silver Pads Grand Slam, the jetpack, and a laser gun attached to the jetpack. It was just four pegs with a platform on it that he stood on, and that was about it. Pretty simple.
This was for the poor kids, and even I didn't have this one. I must have been really poor. Fun fact about this one, the JUMP, as I understand it, wasn't just made by Hasbro. There was another company called Daddy Mac that made it, and another company called Criss Cross that make it, because Criss Cross will make you jump, and Daddy Mac will make you jump. I apologize. All right, let's move on.
You almost had me. You almost had me.
I saw the look on his face. Almost he was buying it for half a second. He was like, what? Where do I get this Daddy Mac version of the jump? Where is it offered? All right, let's get back to
it. It took me a little bit longer because, being truthful, I listen to country music mostly. Once you say Criss Cross, I'm like, oh, never mind.
My early 90s hip-hop references were wasted here, but that's okay. All right, let's talk about one that has an awesome name. This was also my nickname in college, by the way, the Polar Battle Bear. That's what they call it. Which is funny because you think with a name like Polar Battle Bear, like you would think like big, meaty vehicle, but it's not. It's kind of a small, like it's like a lean snowmobile, really. Clearly designed to go with your snow job figure, right? It's a snowmobile with a couple of missiles on it. Got that sort of Arctic white with black trim. But I just always thought it was kind of funny because it has such a big sounding name to me for a small vehicle, but it's a cool vehicle. And it does pair nicely, of course, with your snow job figure. So that was good planning on their part, I think, on this vehicle launch.
Pairs well with your snow job and your gung-ho figure, who can apparently withstand all the cold with no winter gear.
They put him on the box.
I know.
With his open shirt out in the snow.
Yep. Now, you don't do a lot with vehicles, but as a collector and a customizer, I literally have, it's probably a 18 by 12 by 12 tote full of pieces of this vehicle that I've collected over the years. And I have two complete because of the missiles are missing or the roll bars missing. But it seems like everybody had one. It goes back to what you're talking about with the JUMP and Polar Battle Bear. And they had price points that everybody could collect or buy, from the figures to the small playsets to the middle-sized vehicles to the big play sets, so that everybody could be involved in it. You know, you could collect whatever you could afford. Your parents and grandparents would get you for Christmas. But it seems like every collection I get has some pieces of a Polar Battle Bear in it.
It's just a very affordable. I think I saw the original retail. It was like $3.19. It's just a real affordable. And what a, like I said, it's a good accentuate. If you got, you know, you pick up Snow Job, who was probably $1.99 or $2, $2.50 or something. It's like the natural thing to go, well, just for about basically the same price I can get the vehicle to, you know?
All right. So I'm not sure if Jared's going to be disappointed or happy that I'm getting this one, or actually it's really Jason. More like, probably,
yeah, with Jason. How Jason feels.
Next up is the Sky Striker, which is the XP-14F. And it is basically a very good rendition of the F-14 Tomcat. Very good rendition. I had this as when I was a kid, and it was one of my favorite toys. The construction of it was sturdy, how much it looked like the plane. So it is a white plane with the black fins, with a swing wing, came with Ace. I'm guessing this was somewhat near and dear to you as well.
Absolutely. I did get a Sky Striker for a birthday or Christmas along the way, and Jason was always jealous of it. It's a great, great vehicle, you know, to be able to move the lever to sweep the wings back and forward like a real F-14. You know, the ordnance, it's solidly built, kind of like you were talking about. I don't really collect a lot of vehicles, but this is one that every once in a while I will find at a yard sale. It'll be stripped down and a lot of times maybe just outer shell or whatever. But like, it's one of those ones that I think a lot of people had. Its price point apparently was $14.95, which back in the 80s was pretty decent. But for the quality, it had a good heft to it. But I always like to point this out. There's a lot of luck that happens in the G.I. Joe toy line to make it like the preeminent toy line of the 80s. But this is like, to me, the only bad luck story is, you know, reading directly from the website here, the Combat Jet Sky Striker was first released in 1983 and it was discontinued in 1986. Hey, Jim, what movie came out in 1986 that maybe they should have left this one on shelves?
Was it, did it have something to do with some guy that doesn't age much at all?
Yes, he drinks unicorn blood. Top Gun? Yes, Top Gun comes out in 86. So just as these are dying on the shelves, the movie that would just propel the F-14 to absolute stardom comes out. And I always just felt like, oh man, it's almost like this toy, if it had just waited 1 year or 2 years, I think they would have sold even more of them. Yeah, still a great toy.
I didn't know that it was out for sale for that long. Because usually after they have them on the shelf for 2 years and then that's it, generally.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point, so this came out, it would have been 83 and 84. What came out in 85? They would tie in very well with the Sky Striker.
Ooh. What can
I? It's was over that, my right and left shoulder.
Was that was it the time travel movie?
No. The USS Flag.
Oh, I thought we were talking movies still.
Oh, no. Oh, sorry. I apologize. Goodness. Yes. Apologize.
No, I was thinking of that movie with the aircraft carrier where it goes in time and they've got like the modern jets.
Yes. That was Final Countdown. That's not a horrible movie. Yes, Final Countdown.
Anyways, you're absolutely right. This would pair so well with the Flag, you know, being an aircraft carrier. This.
Yeah. But yeah, I didn't realize it was on the shelf for that long. And they actually, on the USS Flag, the arrestor hook that came with the Flag clips right on the back of the Sky Striker.
Of course.
So,
all right. Next up is basically another one of these pull behind vehicles that you would hook to a Vamp or a Wolverine. This time around, they came out with one called the Twin Battle Gun, also known as the Whirlwind. Again, pretty simple. A twin cannon that you would drag behind your other vehicles. Very much in the same vein as the HAL, I think was the first one, or the Mobile Missile System, I think kind of ran in this similar vein. So, yeah, it's kind of a forgettable one because it's just kind of like another drag it behind. It's got a couple guns on it. It's kind of cool. Just really a good accent piece if you've got the vehicles to drag them around with, in my opinion anyway. But that's all I got on the Whirlwind.
That's one of those pieces that is good for diorama building. Again, price points, add to your extra vehicles. The next up is the Wolverine, which is an armored missile vehicle. Basically, a two-track tank with a cockpit right in the middle, right underneath the 12 missiles.
Mm-hmm. I was just begging to get lost.
Oh yeah. And came with CoverGirl. It came with that cool little tow cable that you could rescue other vehicles with. All around, a good basic military vehicle, just adding to that military feel.
Oh, 100%. This is a, like I told you, near and dear to my heart. I remember getting this as a mail away. I was so proud of it. I can vividly remember taking it to school for like a show and tell. I want to say it was like fourth grade or something like that. I was like, I got this thing. And I was showing the tow hook and all this stuff. And all my friends were like, dang, that's dope. And I was like, yes, it is. And I didn't realize I was late to the party because apparently the mail away was later. 85 to 87. Yeah. I want to say I got mine in around 86. I think this is one of those vehicles too that really helped get boys over the girl toy, quote unquote, girl toy hump. You know, you had Scarlet in the first wave, and well, this we talked about the smart thing they did was make her look unique. That made her look kind of more desirable. And here they're bringing in their next female character. And I like to think that behind the scenes, they're like, okay, we want to get over the girl toy hump, get boys to buy this. Let's package it with an amazingly cool vehicle with 12 missiles called the Wolverine. You know, anything Wolverine was cool at this time because the comic character was cool. Around this time is when Red Dawn comes out and they refer to themselves as the Wolverines. Like anything Wolverine is cool. I think it was a good marketing ploy to say we're gonna have another female character. She's gonna be super pretty. She's gonna be basically a model, but she's gonna drive the hardest looking badass freaking thing that we've got. And I was like, that's very clever, and it worked on me. And I love CoverGirl, and I love the Wolverine
CoverGirl with who was quite often overlooked because Scarlet was such a cool character, and then Lady J came a couple years later. She was such a strong character that CoverGirl quite often just got overlooked in the comics and with cartoons. Devil's Due and IDW, I think, did good by her with some good storylines later on. You guys have covered that in the Devil's Due run a little bit already, haven't you?
Yeah, I remember one where she was teamed up with Spirit, I think, and they were tracking down some Serpentor kids.
An overlooked character that they developed quite well.
I think that is probably the downside to her is that since she was never a on-the-peg individual figure, I think that kind of helps people forget about her just a little bit because you had to have the vehicle to have her. Yep. The only way to get her.
Yep.
We've got one more, and I had these little guys, man, and I'd kind of almost forgotten that I'd had. The Pack Rats, the little, I think they're little, were they wind-up action to them or no? They just rolled around? Okay. Yeah, there's the whole Pack Rats. There's a Flamethrower Pack Rat, there was a Machine Gun Pack Rat, and a Missile Launcher Pack Rat. And the idea is they're just small, like almost like robotic, or you can control them with like a remote control. You can't even fit a guy into them, is what I'm telling you. They're small vehicles that just have these specialty things. And I'm sure their price point was exceptionally low. $1.59 is what I'm seeing here on the website. Easy stocking stuffer for the parents to get you. I had all three. I'm certain Jason had none. And God bless us, everyone. They're really just a low price point thing to get you another neat little Joe item. And I think it totally works. I find them to be charming.
They were cheaper than figures.
Yeah. They might have been.
Wow. That's pretty good. I remember having one of them. I didn't have it very long because I'm sure I remember losing it fairly quickly. So anything else before we move on to the Cobra vehicles?
No. Good little second year of vehicles. Good expansion there. And I'm certain we'll talk about our favorites in a little bit.
Moving on to the Cobra vehicles. First up is the Cobra Fang, which stands for Fully Armored Negator Gyrocopter. It's a black single-person helicopter with four missiles, a swivel gun on the front, almost like a jet propulsion in the back, kind of helping along. And you could fit two characters on the skids. This was another one of those iconic vehicles that when you think Cobra, you think Fang, Hiss, later on the Stun. This was Cobra's first aircraft. Again, a very iconic, probably very affordable. $499.
My research says $319. What okay, do you got?
So this one, I got $499 on the tag, but have been later, an older tag then. Or it was Sears.
Yeah, it was definitely around that $5 range for sure.
Yeah. So this is one of those that I'm guessing everybody had, but did you have one, Jared?
Absolutely. You know, if it was kind of cool and affordable, I did have it. Yeah, just like you said, a classic. We talked about how the Dragonfly was, you know, by today's standards, not expensive at all. It was like $8 or $10 or something like that. But back then, that was a little more. So again, this is good balance by Hasbro saying, well, you know, hey, if you buy your kid the Dragonfly for just a few bucks more, you can get the bad guy helicopter to fight it, right? You know, they're really good at balancing their price points and making it very tempting to make package deals. And what a great, fun vehicle. Next up will be the perhaps most classic of all Cobra vehicles. It is the Cobra Hiss. We mentioned it earlier. Some super fancy people have made some that have two turrets, you know, by their own hands, if you can believe it or not. But we're going to talk about the base model, which is basically a small black tank with a two-turreted gun on top. It had that cool canopy where you could open up and basically have a driver and a gunner. You could put a couple guys on the back as well. It had a lot of versatility, and it was a much welcome thing because you, in the first line, you had a lot of these cool Joe vehicles, not really any Cobra vehicles. And now you got something that the Vamp can go against, something that the new Wolverine can go against. And it's just got a real unique design, classic black Cobra tank with like the red letters and the red trim and the red driver. Really well done.
No, the Hiss tank is iconic. You can't have a G.I. Joe or a Cobra team without one. There were how many different versions throughout the years? One of my favorites is the Hiss 2. But even after that, even the modern era, they just kept coming out with new versions.
It's the one that just lasts.
Next up is Snake Armor, which in the store was a white, almost body armor. I don't know what you'd call it. All right, off the box, it says a suit of armor with four removable weapon pods. You could fit a figure inside of it. It had different arms, like a flamethrower and a gun and a missile launcher, similar to what the Bat would be later on, where you could change the arms out. So this one was one of those that I didn't really attract me as a kid, but nowadays it does, just because of the unique build and construction. And when you buy the snake armor, you have to buy a figure to put in it.
Put in it. Absolutely. I loved the snake armor. This is one I had as a kid. I've always had a fascination with, like, exoskeleton. That's a word I could have given you earlier to help you out.
That's what I was kind of looking for. Yeah.
Like, you can directly put on your figures. I want to say that because of its design, there was actually a couple figures that wouldn't quite fit. I think Major Blood didn't fit, or Destro.
We didn't mention earlier, but Destro was a little bit taller than everybody else.
That's right. So he was just skosh taller. Yeah. But definitely had a lot of fun with this one as a kid. It was featured, I'm almost positive, in comics, probably cartoon, because I just have that memory of seeing it and going, oh yeah, it's cool. You know, it kind of spiritually even almost lives on in the live action G.I. Joe movie that would come out, where they were using exo suits to enhance their physical abilities as well. Not nearly this clunky or anything. Special place in my heart for the snake armor. I just really enjoyed it as a kid. All right, we'll round this out with the Cobra Attack Glider, a.k.a. the Viper. We talked about the Viper pilot earlier, who's basically your typical Cobra soldier with a silver emblem instead of a red one. The Viper glider was pretty cool, much like the Joe one, though. I don't think it was really built to last. It had a neat camouflage pattern of almost that tealy bluish look to it, maybe a little lighter blue, with black camo on it and the red Cobra emblems. You know, they're clearly going, hey, well, it's some kind of a lower price thing that we can get out there that kids can interact, get out, you know, get outside and actually fly these things. We all love flying things. We all love parachute things. This falls into that category. And so you have a Cobra version of the glider. And again, I've never seen one in my entire life.
If I do, I will be surprised.
I think the odds of you finding one still in the box is probably higher than finding an out-of-box one, because all the out-of-box ones broke.
Yeah, so. I would agree with that, yes. So, anything before we round out and give our top threes?
I better put some thought into that. But no, man, it's another good
year.
I'll go first.
And then that way you got time. How's that?
All right, man, hit me with it.
So, this year had a little more variety of vehicles to choose from, and so many iconic vehicles. This year is going to be difficult for me to pick only three. Going to give it a shot, and in no particular order is this my top three: Polar Battle Bear, the Sky Striker, and the Hiss. The Polar Battle Bear, with, you know, where I live here in Michigan, and of course the Hiss is so iconic.
It's hard for me to pick three as well. I'm gonna do a little cheater thing here. Top three that I owned: Sky Striker, Wolverine, Fang. If I was to readjust and be allowed to have things I didn't own, Sky Striker, Wolverine still make it. And I got to go Dragonfly, because you know how I feel about that dang Dragonfly. That's how I would do it. With, you know, obviously honorable mentions to the Hiss, the APC. Hell, I even like the Pack Rats and the Snake Armor, man. This is just a really sweet spot for me. But yeah, I think the common theme we're seeing here, though, is Sky Striker reigns supreme from the 1983 line.
83 was such a strong line for vehicles and figures. You can't pick just three of them. It's if I had my choice, I'd have them all.
I may be jumping ahead on the script. I'm a bad guess, but this is the first year of, like, isn't this the first year of, like, accessory packs, collector's case? Yes,
it is. And the accessory pack and the collector's case, and they had the belt thing where you put three figures. Oh, the
three
in there.
Guy belt thing.
Yeah,
love that thing.
I believe that was this year. Yeah, they called it the Pocket Patrol Pack.
I think Jason and I each had one. That was like the ultimate cool thing. I remember to, like, go to spend the night at a buddy's house and just pick, like, the three Joes that I knew he didn't have that I could add to the battle, and just boom, 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 right there on the hit pack, man.
See, if I had the choice between a Pocket Patrol Pack and another figure, I was going to get the figure. But I can understand the draw to those extra accessories. And so.
Yeah, honestly, I think when I'm spending my quote-unquote own money, you know, which my parents gave me, like an allowance or, you know, good grades, money and all that. I was spending it on figures. I think almost every vehicle and every like pocket pack thing, that was like a birthday or Christmas thing that my parents were going to, or my grandparents or my aunts and uncles. So like, yeah, I was definitely with you. Like if I was investing my own money, it was figures.
Most of my vehicles, headquarters, later on, Terradrome, all that stuff, that was Christmas and birthday presents. For birthdays, we could pick a gift that was $30 or less. For Christmas, the main gift was $50 or less. So I pushed it. I guess. All right, Jared, thank you for sharing all that. Next up is our last segment, which we are calling Military Surplus.
Now I know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe.
This episode, we're going to be discussing the many different sets of trading cards that were produced for G.I. Joe. Trading cards have been around for a long time. Usually they were relegated to sports such as baseball, football, basketball. But just like anything else, when there was an opportunity, companies will jump at anything to advertise their product and make money at the same time. Some of these sets can be very elusive, and when you find them, people want some money for them. As we discuss these sets, we'll be using yojo.com. So let's look at them. So the first set we're going to talk about is the Milton Bradley set from 1986. This set was put out by Milton Bradley in 1986, and it was pretty much a set that had the card art of the figures up to that point. Looking at yojo.com, I see the Alpine, the Cobra Commander. Those are all the card art from their packages. I have seen one complete set at a show. A guy was selling next to me, and he had a complete set. And that was the first time I had seen these, and I have not seen them since. How about you, Jared? Have you seen these before?
I think you made these up. I think you hacked the webpage. I've never heard of these before in my life. they're awesome because, like you said, it's just really box art and card art in card form. And they're really cool. But no, man, it came out in 86. That was the year before I left for Germany. So you would think I would have spotted these as a kid, you know. But if I'm honest with myself, when I'm going to that little card section at KB Toy Store up by the register, I'm after Garbage Pail Kids in 1986. So I might have just kind of overlooked these.
It looked like these came in, not your typical baseball card or sports card packages. It looked like it was actual cardboard back with a plastic bubble on it.
Maybe that's why. Maybe they look like they're almost designed to hang on pegs, which maybe is what precluded them from being in that card section and why we all missed it. Interesting. Yep. Good
observation. That would be my guess.
The next setup is the Comic Images set from 1987. These clearly did not make their way to Germany, as I lived there from 87 to 90. I've never seen these before in my life either. They feature art taken from the Marvel comic books turned into card form. I'm looking at a couple samples. Pretty cool. It doesn't look like they fell into that, you know, it hangs on a peg. This looks like it's in the box that you would see up by the register. But it's a 55 card set that I am wholly unfamiliar with.
I remember the first time I saw these was probably late 80s, early 90s, walking around a flea market, tractor show somewhere where somebody was selling these. I got like 10 of them. Okay. And I didn't see hide or hair of these for decades. I kept looking, and I'm the type of guy that I could go on eBay and found them and bought them, but I like to find them in the wild. It's just something, the thrill of the hunt. Until that same guy, he was next to me. He had a whole set for sale he wanted $60 for the whole set. That's how uncommon these can be. And I traded some other trading. I had some Marvel cards or something. I traded the set for him. But again, like you said, they took the art from the comic books, different scenes, different action poses. And on the back was just a description of what happened that issue or what that scene. Very good art on those. Different from the previous one where it had the package art. So the next set, I'm guessing, is the one that everybody's familiar with when you say G.I. Joe trading cards. It's the Impel 1991 set. It has 200 cards. They had a lot of different categories. They had the original Joes, the rookies. They had comic book storylines, the roll call or the honor roll, which is the fallen characters, Cobra and Joe. All the famous covers. This one, I was actively in comic book store all the time at this point. So I bought these all the time. I'm sure I had a full set before And then, you know, later on, find some unopened boxes and made the mistake of opening them. Now, did you have any of these back then?
You know, I actually didn't. In this 1991 time frame, as far as trading cards, because I was doing a lot of baseball cards, and but outside of sports cards, for me, it was the Marvel. I think Marvel Series 1, I think, came out in 91. And they're very similar, I feel like, in design. So I was really on the whole Marvel thing, and I guess I was unaware of the G.I. Joe from Impel. I became aware of the Joe cards from Impel, oh, maybe 5-6 years ago. And luckily, I guess they were prolific enough. They're not super expensive. I was able to buy a couple of boxes and put together a whole set. I have a whole set now. And the boxes were not, I remember them not being very pricey. Like full unopened boxes, I want to say I was paying like $20 for them or something. But this was a few years ago. The market may have changed for all I know. But yeah, I came to them very late, but I'm very familiar with them as I do have a whole set.
Yeah, I bought a couple boxes for $10 10 years ago.
Still affordable. Again, I mean, I think we're talking. I'm talking 5 to 10 years ago. We may be lying to people who are listening. They may have gone up for all I know. But you know, this was the '90s. This is and trading cards got so hot in the '90s that they were, I think, way overprinted. You know, which is why a lot of things from the that we were supposed to, you know, be huge collectible things in the '90s. Just, you know, the death of Superman. This comic's going to be super collectible, but we printed a million copies. The first issue of Spawn is going to be super collectible, but we printed a million copies. Yeah. So it's like it falls into that realm, I think. I'll go on to mention that Impel did the Gold Border Hall of Fame cards, very much similar to the ones that we just talked about.
Those were packaged in action figures.
Oh, okay. I have a few of those, and I don't know where the heck I got them then. Huh, that's weird. I must have bought like a loose stack of these somewhere, because I have a few and I always thought, oh, these are weird. I just thought they were a follow-on, like, oh, now find them with the gold border, you know? Like, okay.
Yeah, like a chase card or something, right? But no, those were in certain action figures.
Okay.
So the next set of cards is the Search and Destroy set from 1993. Ah, yes. These came in the comic books, and they were, I'd say, live-action shots. You had people dressed up in G.I. Joe costumes from that time. I think at this time they were doing the live action commercials?
Yeah, that's what these are.
I think this, kudos to them for trying. Some of these are, you know, cosplay before cosplay. They look a little clunky. Still, neat set to have.
Well, again, it's a set that I'm completely unfamiliar with until we were looking at them just now. And yeah, basically they just took shots from the commercials and turned them into cards, you know. And like you said, kudos to them for getting some more mileage out of, yeah, hey, we've got this stuff. Let's reuse it. So, sure. Apparently, the follow-up to that was in 1994, Comic Images 30th Salute to G.I. Joe Trading Cards. This series featured rare toys, a brief history of G.I. Joe, interesting tidbits about both the 12-inch and the 3 3/4-inch toy lines. So, yeah, you basically have this 30th anniversary. I remember the 30th anniversary in 1994. Apparently, they did some card stuff with it, which again I'm not familiar with. I just am looking at a sealed case of them here on yojo.com. They look neat, and I really like this guy's got a signed card by Joe Kubert that he drew one of them. That's cool. But again, this is apparently I was only aware of the Impel cards. Jim, what do you got on these 30th anniversary cards?
This set, I actually have another completed set of these. It was a great mix of, as you said, the 60s, the 70s figures. And they actually had some unproduced vehicles in this set as well. So it was a good combination. They covered all the aspects from the 30-year anniversary. It's a very unique mix. So if you ever get a chance to see the set, the full set, it's worth taking a look at. And with that, close out the show. First of all, Jared, I want to thank you for joining me on this episode, G.I. Joe Outpost, where we discuss wonderful figures from 83 vehicles. Any closing thoughts, and where can people find you on the internet?
All right, closing thoughts are, this was fun as always. Good trip down memory lane. I hope our listeners have enjoyed that as well. You can find me all around the Long Box Crusade here on the same network that Jim is broadcasting from. Lots of different shows. But if you want to chat with me personally, I am @YardSaleArtist on X, Facebook, Instagram. It's all @YardSaleArtist. You can check out my artwares at www.theyardsaleartist.com.
I want to thank everyone at the Longbox Crusade Network for adding G.I. Joe Outpost to their extensive line of shows. Take a listen. All the other shows that are on the Longbox Crusade on any podcatcher. And if you like what you hear, go to Patreon, become a Crusader Club member where you get all the access.
All the access.
And all the access. So you can find me on Facebook as Jim Miel, J-I-M-M-I-E-L. Also on Facebook at Timbers Toys and Customs, where I share a lot of the customs and the toy shows that I go to, as well as Twitter. I am Jim the Joe Junkie. Join us next time as we discuss the Marvel comic books from 1983, issues 8 through 20. If there's nothing else, Jared?
I'm good.
Dismissed, and we'll see you next time.
Yo, Joe!
The music themes for this show are done by musical genius Joe November. Please check out his SoundCloud at joseflin99. That's J-O-S-E-F-L-I-N-99. You will not regret it.